We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Story number one. I'm a 33-year-old, highly rational woman, and I'm more likely to explain bumps in the night with air ducts, power surges, and the occasional raccoon than to reach for the paranormal. Or I was, until the night I called 911. Or thought I did. Everything started a month ago. I live alone in a squeaky old house outside Portland, Oregon. After a late shift, I was microwaving stale pizza at about 2 a.m., The kitchen window was matted with the usual fog, except this time, the condensation didn't seem right. Every time I exhaled, I saw the damp bloom grow on the outside of the glass, sinking to my breath, perfectly, except I could feel cool air on the back of my neck, like I was the one outside, breathing on myself from behind. I squinted to see if it was some trick of the light. I wiped the window, and that's when I saw a vaguely human shape in the pane. A shadow just a few shades darker than dark, its lips shaped around my name. That's what made me jump. I swear, I saw the mouth move, all fog and no face, whispering my name. Emmy. No one calls me that. No one alive. I dropped my plate, smashing it, and grabbed my phone. Embarrassingly, I was going to call my mom. My thumb hit 911 by mistake. I almost hung up, but something inside wanted me to connect. The phone rang 3 times. When the operator answered, it was like the sound slipped, like an audio tape running under someone's thumb. At first, it was a woman's voice, standard, calm, but then it hiccuped. A distorted, deep undertone vibrated underneath her, calling me by Emmy Lou. That's what my grandfather used to call me when I was 4. He's been dead for 25 years. I tried to explain that maybe someone was outside my house, but she kept interjecting, her words flickering with static, and at odd points, her questions were backwards. I wasn't truly registering it then, but when I mentally replay her questions now, I hear it. The same phrase over and over, in a warbling, reversed croon. Emmy, what's inside the cupboard with the old key? I stammered something, asking if an officer was on the way, and she replied, "Tell me about the cup covering the key." My stomach lurched. Who the hell knew about the old porcelain cup? I only keep it in the back of the top cupboard because it covers a little, rusty skeleton key, a creepy thing that came with the house, something I'd never used or even told anyone about. Then her line warped again, dropping to that guttural tone. "And the knife, the one from your grandmother. Is it clean, Emmy Lou?" I pressed the phone harder to my face, spit out, "What are you talking about? Who is this?" The line went dead silent. Then click, the call ended. I half hoped the police would show up, but nobody ever came. That night or morning, by then, I unplugged everything in my kitchen. Stupid, but I had to reassert some control, like I could unglitch my own house. And then at exactly 3 a.m., the oven timer beeped, loud, sharp as a scream. The oven wasn't plugged in. The cord dangled, useless, against the wall. It kept happening every night after. No power, no explanation. Always 3 a.m., the witching hour. I tried to call the police the next day from my cell. The screen glitched. The numbers flickered. Then instead of 911, it said, "Emmy's cell." When the call connected, I only heard ragged breathing. My breathing echoed, like it was piped from my lungs into my ear. The call ended. My phone battery drained to 0 in seconds. Sleep became impossible. The few times I dozed, I'd fall into brutally vivid dreams, memories of that night, but from a perspective hovering coldly outside my house, peering in through the fogged windows, desperate to get in, feel flesh, breathe real air. I'd watch myself pacing in the kitchen, and each dream memory ended with my reflection on the glass morphing into a pitch-black shape, mouth stretching open. My doorbell started ringing at random times, always just as I drifted off, always chilling my blood. I installed a security camera right above the door, but when I checked the footage, it would show static at the ringing, sometimes a frozen frame of me standing at the door, from outside when I swore I was inside, cowering every single time. I have chills even writing this. The shots were always just a little off, my eyes too wide, mouth at a stretched, rictus grin, like something puppeteered me for a second. And when dawn broke, the sunlight seemed to avoid my house, pooling at the neighbor's yards but leaving everything outside my windows dim and thick, like the dawn was happening in reverse, hour by hour. I haven't slept more than a few minutes at a time. All I want now is for someone to tell me, is this what it feels like to slip between the cracks? Did I slide somewhere I was never supposed to be just because I picked up the phone at the wrong moment? Is there something else with my face, my name, learning all the ways in? My oven timer is about to go off again. 3 a.m. If you hear from Emmy Lou after this and she seems a little too eager or her words come backwards, please, for the love of God, don't answer the door. If anyone survived something like this, please, please tell me what happened. The dark outside my window doesn't want to end. Story number 2. Until last winter, I thought I was like anyone else. My routines looked so plain on paper. Commute, spreadsheets, microwave dinners in my one bedroom. Boring, but safe. Normal. Looking back, I guess I never noticed the first few times it happened. It started one bland Wednesday evening. I remember because dinner was nearly ready and my alarm flashed 4:41 p.m., just a few emails to send before clocking out. I was scrolling, yawning, half watching the gloomy rain through the window. Then my oven timer beeped, louder than usual. I checked my phone, 4:51 p.m., 7 minutes, gone with nothing in my memory but my own heartbeat, jumping like an animal trapped in my chest. I told myself I must have just nodded off at my desk, maybe a micro nap. My job's boring, I get it. But on Thursday, it happened again. This time, I was folding laundry, socks in hand, then a heavy drag through my chest like slipping on black ice. And it was 4:53 p.m. My hands smelled like detergent, but my mouth tasted metallic, like nickels, and my tongue felt raw, as if I'd chewed it. A peculiar, bitter tang lingered until the next morning. The next week, I started to pay close attention. My phone alarm went off at 4:40 p.m. each day, just so I could spot it coming. On Monday, as the light faded silver through my blinds, I braced myself, my head tight, scalp prickling. At 4:41 p.m., I put my phone down and stared at the kitchen clock. My felt-tip pen rolled beneath my palm. Then, like a light switch, a blink, and it was 4:49 p.m. My coffee was cold. I'd somehow uncapped the pen and drawn an uneven spiral on my notepad. I couldn't remember picking it up. I touched the indented paper, my fingertips numb. The room smelled of static and faint smoke. I bought a cheap webcam and trained it on my desk the next day, determined to catch myself zoning out. At 4:44 p.m., my face appeared blank, eyes staring at nothing, right before the feed stuttered, became staticky, and skipped 6 minutes ahead. When the video resumed, I looked exhausted, rubbing the back of my hand, which had a faint pink scratch. I felt hungover all evening. I called my doctor. She suggested stress, undiagnosed seizures, or maybe a vitamin deficiency. I got a full panel. Everything looked fine. These things can be neurological, she said, or memory lapses from fatigue. But I was sleeping great, eating well, and never lost time at other moments. The episodes always started at 4:44 p.m., Wednesdays, then Mondays, until finally it crept into every weekday. I started keeping a rescue inhaler nearby, even though I'm not asthmatic. During these episodes, after I'd come to, my lungs tingled like I'd held my breath too long. The metallic taste grew stronger each time, clinging to my teeth. The physical oddities escalated. One Friday, I regained awareness standing barefoot on the cold porch, door slightly open, as drizzle spattered the welcome mat. My socks were missing, and there was a dull ache in my calves as though I'd sprinted upstairs. Shivers crawled up my spine. My house key was in my hand, muddy and warm, though I had no memory of leaving the living room. Later that night, I found a nail, black with grime, on my kitchen floor, a thumbnail almost certainly mine, though I didn't recall breaking one. My own reflection in the microwave seemed delayed, a flicker too slow, as if someone else had just stepped away but hadn't. My friends laughed it off. You need a vacation, Paul. Maybe, but sleep made things worse. Some mornings I awoke to bruises in odd places, knees, ribs, even the bridge of my nose. Once I woke to my back cold, wishing I'd left the lights on, and there was a faint gray dust under my fingernails and a sharp, earthy odor in my hair. You may wonder why I didn't call anyone during an episode or set up more cameras. I did. I begged a coworker to call me every day just after 4:45 p.m. 3 days in a row, my phone displayed missed call unknown at 4:48 p.m., but no ringtone ever reached me. One day, I set up an alarm with the loudest buzzer I could find. Instead, my bedside lamp flickered off, plunging the room into a flat, muffled darkness that felt thick as velvet. When the light returned, it was 4:49 p.m., and my heart was pounding as if I'd run for miles. It wasn't only the minutes that disappeared now either. Little things, a page ripped out of a notebook, shoes left precisely at the door, faces in my dreams mouthing numbers, always 777. My cat refused to be in the living room after 4 p.m., hissing at shadows I couldn't see. Last week, the lost time stretched to 9 minutes, enough to find myself kneeling in the backyard mud, clutching a small stone I didn't recognize. It felt warm, smooth, electric. I dropped it and it vanished in the matted grass. Now every time I blink in that gray hour before sunset, I see shapes moving behind my eyelids. Sometimes I hear whispers, Not words, just the static scrape of nails on something hard, deep below my ribs. We all lose track of time, right? Maybe I'm just sick. Maybe it's a migraine or something in the pipes. I want to believe that. It's 4:43 p.m. now. There's a ringing in my left ear, and the air tastes of burnt pennies. My fingers twitch above the keyboard, and I feel that cold pull again, patient and greedy. Story number three. When my dad had his surgery last December, they said it was routine, a minor complication from years of diabetes. Mom, always the worrier, left a post-it by the phone. Visiting hours 5 to 7 p.m., room 407. I visited every day that week. I made it my ritual. Work until 4, drive through the sleet, bring him a cinnamon muffin or once an old Rolling Stones magazine. Hospitals always made me antsy. Blinking lights, that antiseptic lemon scent. Nurses shuffling down waxed halls. The Thursday visit was when everything started feeling off. I remember the heavy weight of slush on my shoes as I padded down the hall, briefly noticing how shiny and new everything looked since their recent renovation. There was barely anyone around, just a plump nurse yawning at the station and the muffled beep of a monitor somewhere distant. I paused by the faded Christmas poster taped near Dad's door and went in. He was up, half sitting, blearily smiling at me. The lights made his gray hair gleam. "You made it, Mikey," he rasped. I dropped my messenger bag by the radiator. We talked about the weather, football, how bad the hospital coffee was, stuff we always joked about. Two nurses came by. One checked his IV, and the other scribbled on a clipboard. They never spoke to me. At some point, Dad asked me to help him walk. He swung his legs over, feet lumpy in hospital socks. I got an arm around him. He wasn't a big guy, but he trembled in my grip. We shuffled slow laps around the bed, with his monitor beeping in time. The quarter-turn mirror on the bathroom door showed both our faces, his pale, mine red from the rush and hospital heat. We sat and chatted for nearly an hour. He grew tired, eyes blinking heavy. Mom texted me, "How's Dad? Bring home milk." I took a selfie, both of us grinning lopsided with our heads together, so I could show her he was okay. I left just after 7, nodding at the same nurse at the desk. She didn't look up. The parking lot was empty, the sky drained of color and thick with freezing fog. The next morning, Mom called. "Did you try to go last night?" she asked, voice subdued. "They canceled visiting hours after 3. Some flu thing." She said nobody at the hospital could confirm my visit. "You sure you didn't just call him?" I almost laughed. "Mom, I was there. Ask Dad." He was confused, too. On FaceTime, his bandaged hand blurry in the frame, he insisted, "Didn't see you, son." Might have dreamed it. I slept a lot. I wanted to believe he'd just been medicated and dozed through the whole thing, but memory is sticky, especially when it's so clear. I scrolled through my phone for the selfie. It was there. Time-stamped 6:10 p.m., me smiling, him less certain, eyes rimmed with red. Room 407's ugly paisley curtains visible behind us. In the background, through an open...
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Door, a pale arm on a gurney. I was sure the room had been empty besides us, but the details seemed less trustworthy the longer I stared. The digital time and date in the corner. I showed my mom. She frowned, said maybe it was from the day before. I decided to check with the hospital itself. That Saturday I went back, armed with a box of chocolates and an uneasy grin. The same faded poster still taped to Dad's doorway. But when I swung in, the decor was slightly different. Another painting, less clutter. The Christmas poster now had a rip across the middle. "Did you change the room?" I asked the board nurse at the desk. She looked puzzled. "Hasn't changed in years." I asked if she'd seen me on Thursday. "Sorry, they shut the floor at 3 for patient safety," she answered flatly, more wary this time. She checked a visitor's log. No sign in from me, no sign in from anyone after 2:30 that day. I thought maybe I didn't sign anything. I pulled up my phone. The selfie wouldn't load. It flickered, then showed an old error icon, and the thumbnail was corrupt. Maybe it was a bad update, I told myself. Maybe the hospital Wi-Fi was screwing up my cloud data. Sunday night, rummaging in my coat pocket, I found Dad's old stethoscope, the one I'd swiped off his tray as a joke on Thursday. It had a new crack in the rubber tubing, and when I squeezed the bell, it hissed like air escaping. I don't remember bringing it home. That week, the dream started. I'd be walking the hospital corridor with the overhead fluorescents buzzing and flicking. Sometimes I'd smell burnt toast. I'd see my dad, not in his real hospital bed, but propped up in a wheelchair, drifting slowly toward me in darkness, face split by an impossible grin. Every time I'd try to move, the linoleum would ripple beneath me like water, sticky and ice cold. Small things went missing at home. My car keys, the bag I'd carried that Thursday, a grocery receipt with milk, bread, bananas scrawled in my handwriting. I'd find damp footprints in the entryway, though I hadn't been out. On my last visit to Dad before he came home, I saw the quarter-turn mirror had shattered, just a black crack through the center, like a spider web. I asked the nurse about it. She shrugged. "You're the first to notice." In the reflective metal, my face seemed a millisecond behind, mouth open in a silent scream long after I'd closed it. Sometimes I pull up that phone photo, and sometimes it's there. Me and Dad smiling, the paisley curtain behind us, the background smudged and shadowy. On other days, it's gone, replaced by static, as if the file never existed at all. I've stopped showing anyone. They just roll their eyes. Maybe it was stress, or sleep deprivation, or a patchy memory. Maybe Dad's face is right. Maybe I've been somewhere else. Let nerves scramble everything. Maybe those hospital floors echo everyone's ghosts. Maybe the mind fills in blanks when routine is shredded by fear. But when I walk into hospitals now, the air tastes sharp, cold, electrical, almost metallic. I avoid mirrors and lock my doors, always. At night, sometimes, I hear the faint beeping of a heart monitor from unreachable rooms and see faded footprints down my hallway, dull and wet, vanishing when the morning comes. Story number 4. I'm not the sort of guy who believes in ghosts. I like things that make sense, things you can explain. But some things stick in your mind in a way that makes you wonder, no matter how much you want to shrug them off. It started maybe 2 months ago on one of those muggy July evenings. I walk my dog, Arlo, every night just after 10. We go the same route, looping through my subdivision, quiet blocks, occasional porch lights. Nothing much ever happens. That's what I liked about it. The night I first saw the little girl, the air was thick and bugs swarmed every street lamp. We just rounded the corner onto Cedar Drive when Arlo stopped cold, hackles up. That's when I noticed her, a kid in light blue pajamas, blonde hair, maybe 6 years old. She was riding a red tricycle back and forth across the driveway of a house 3 doors down. It was late for a kid to be out, but she didn't seem scared or upset. She just rode. From the garage door down the sloped driveway, turning perfectly at the curb, then back up. Over and over, same pace, same sharp turns. I'd never seen her before, and I know most of the neighborhood, at least to wave hello. As I passed, I gave a little wave and a hi there, but she didn't react, just kept pedaling. Maybe shy, maybe hyper-focused. The house behind her was dark except for a faint lamp in an upstairs window. The weird thing was, on my way back, 20 minutes later, there she was. Same spot, same pajamas, same exact motion. I would have sworn she hadn't moved an inch, except the tricycle wheel spun. Arlo stared at her, whining softly, so I sped up, feeling silly for letting it bother me. The next night, I half expected to see her again. And sure enough, same place, same loop, but this time without the porch light or the upstairs lamp. Total darkness except for the street light a few yards away. She never once looked up, even as Arlo barked. Her hair didn't move, and her pajamas, which I noticed now were dirty at the knees, never changed. I wondered if I should knock on the door, but something about the silence of the house made my feet heavy. The front yard was wild, grass a little longer than the rest, no car in the driveway. Maybe her parents worked nights? Maybe she was sleepwalking? I rationalized all of this, but my skin itched just being near. Later that night, I mentioned her to my wife. She shrugged, asked if I was sure it wasn't one of the new families that moved in, or if maybe it was just a neighbor's grandkid visiting. Kids are weird, she said. Sometimes they fixate. Maybe she was on the spectrum. It made sense. Sort of. The night after, I forgot about her until Arlo dragged me onto Cedar. I slowed, searching for her, heart pounding. She wasn't there. No lights, no sounds. When I got closer, though, I realized the driveway chalk marks from the tricycle's wheels were everywhere. Thick, overlapping lines, looping in the exact same path. The air smelled faintly sweet, almost like stale candy. Arlo sniffed at the yard and yelped, jerking back. I looked for a leash left out, toys, something. But the yard was empty except for the marks and a small blue ribbon near the curb, like one you'd find in a little girl's hair. That night, Arlo hid under the bed. He's a mutt, not a cowardly one usually. My wife laughed about it, said maybe a skunk had sprayed him, but he never calmed down all night. Things got weirder after that. A week went by with no girl, but sometimes after midnight, I'd notice the garage lights flash on and off from our bedroom window, or a song like a music box coming faintly from somewhere on the street. Once or twice, I woke up to what sounded like a child's giggle, the sort of sound that crawls into your dreams and sits there long after you're awake. 3 nights later, I saw her again, but this time she stopped at the bottom of the driveway as Arlo and I passed. Still didn't look up, just stopped. Her head drooped, and she started humming in this flat, tuneless way that made the hairs rise on my arms. For just a moment, I thought I saw another figure in the window above, a thin, pale face watching, but it vanished when I blinked. I didn't sleep right for days. My wife said maybe I was stressed from work, or maybe with all these news stories lately, I just had my nerves up. I agreed, but couldn't explain the feeling I had, like something watched out of the cracks during the quietest part of the night. I finally convinced myself I needed to know. One Saturday late afternoon, when the sun was still out, I walked up and rang the doorbell. No answer. Peering in the windows, the inside seemed normal, if a little empty. Furniture, a stack of mail by the door, kids' drawings on the fridge. Everything had a thin layer of dust, like nobody'd been home in weeks. Later, talking to a different neighbor, I learned the owners moved out months ago. She thought the place was still on the market, No buyers yet. She said, why? Did you see something weird? I lied. No, just wondered if someone moved in is all. I still walk Arlo, but I haven't seen the girl since. Sometimes, though, under the streetlight, I see wheel marks appear fresh overnight or catch the glint of something shiny at the curb. The window is always dark now, but sometimes I feel the air shiver for no reason at all. Every now and then, a music box tinkles in the night, but when I look, nothing's there. Probably just a prank or a trick of the light. Or maybe it's just my brain playing games with me after hearing the neighbor talk. That's what I tell myself. But most nights, I pick a different street now, just in case the loop isn't finished yet. Story number 5. The day everything started, I almost didn't notice. Tuesdays always drag, especially in late February. Freeze, thaw, freeze again, gray slush lining the curbs, an endless loop of work emails and burnt coffee. I woke up that morning, checked the time on my phone. 7:12 a.m., same as every day. The heater clanked right on cue. After a quick shower, I dressed and shuffled past the blinking light on my answering machine. The red number 4 glowed at me. 4 messages. Odd, I thought I'd checked it last night. I pressed play, static, 2 scam calls, and then my boss reminding me about a meeting rescheduled for this afternoon. Strange he'd just mentioned that in an email yesterday. By 8:30 a.m., I was at my office with a lukewarm muffin and all. Nobody was talking by the coffee pot. Instead, they hovered in small pairs, murmuring about the blackout downtown and how weird that bird thing was. Cindy waved me over. You see the news? She asked. Gary Oldman died. I thought you liked him. I stared, confused, trying to recall seeing anything about the actor on my phone. Hadn't I just seen him in an interview last week? I didn't want to look stupid. Yeah, it's wild, I managed awkwardly. Later that morning, I heard the buzz of voices, heavy, excited. The bird, a huge crow, had flown right into the meeting room window, scattering everyone's nerves. People joked about bad omens. Someone said, "Didn't a crow hit our window last spring?" But everyone laughed it off. By noon, I felt a headache coming on. My screen blurred at the edges. I skipped out early, drove home, and tried to nap on the couch. By evening, only the odd, persistent feeling of being displaced lingered, like muscle memory for a step I'd forgotten how to take. The next morning, the wrong morning, I woke to my alarm at 7:12 a.m., same as before, except everything was off, not obviously wrong, just tilted somehow. The fridge hummed a different jingle. The answering machine glowed with 4 new messages. I pressed play, expecting scam calls, but instead, it was my mother asking how my job interview had gone. I hadn't interviewed anywhere in years. Shaking it off, I went to work. My coworkers clustered in the kitchen again, voices hushed and eyes darting. "Did you see the news? Gary Oldman's in a new movie," Cindy exclaimed. Someone joked, "He's not dead yet." And another person grumbled about no blackout ever happening. I tried to join in, but that crawling, unfamiliar sensation settled over me. The crow slammed into the same window, the same exact window, at almost the same time. This time, Judy screamed and dropped her coffee, just like yesterday. At lunch, I opened my phone to check the date. Still February. As my finger hovered on my Photos app, I saw a shot I didn't remember. A group selfie, everyone in black, clearly at a memorial. The date stamp read March, next month. That afternoon, my boss called me in. I braced, expecting the lecture about technical glitches from yesterday, but instead he wanted to congratulate me. "I heard about your engagement," he said, pumping my hand. "I'm not seeing anyone." Wednesday, the Groundhog Day feelings grew. My apartment had a sinister cast. My shoes lay out differently, grocery receipt on the counter with lemons and coffee circled in red. But my handwriting looked faint and wobbly. A pile of mail was rubber-banded on my kitchen table, all postmarked 2 weeks ahead. Work was a twisted echo. News headlines shifted, sometimes Gary Oldman trending because he launched a charity, sometimes trending as an obituary, sometimes not mentioned at all. The crow hit the window again at 10. Again, coffee spilled. My phone buzzed a dozen times. Invitations to events I'd never heard of, photos of me at parties I knew I hadn't attended. One picture showed me in a yellow sweater, identical to one I donated months ago. Background details changed between versions of the same shot. Different plants on my desk, people I knew swapped out for strangers with blank faces. Thursday, I woke at 7:12 a.m. The heater clanked, then stopped. No red light on the answering machine. The air felt thin, sharp-edged. I could hear the faint thud of my own heartbeat as I moved, almost like a second shadow. At work, nobody noticed me. My morning hellos fell flat, unanswered. When the crow hit the window, nobody reacted. It bounced and fell to the sill, stiff and glistening. I reached for my phone to take a picture, but my hand was trembling so badly that the image came out as a gray smear. By Friday, my world was brittle with tension. My mother called, but her voice was choked with static. "Are you coming over Sunday? You missed Christmas." My dad's voice chimed in, grating and echoey, though he'd been dead for 6 years. "Mike, you okay, son?" The call ended with a piercing electronic shriek that made my vision blur, my nose bleed. When I hung up, I realized my call log was empty. I quit going to work. The crows started gathering on my balcony at 7:12 a.m., pecking at the glass, dark shapes etched against the pale dawn. My microwave showed 7:12 a.m. every time I checked, no matter how long I waited. Neighbors in my building acted as if I didn't exist, even when I said their names. On Saturday, I opened my fridge and found milk that had expired 2 months ago, but was still fresh. The calendar on my wall showed March dates, but yesterday's was already crossed out in thick, with a black marker I never bought. Now every morning is a roll of dice. Sometimes the world feels almost right. Sometimes it's as if I'm watching my own life from underwater. Every sight and sound distorted. Wrong. I keep blinking, waiting to snap out of it. But the days refuse to settle into a single solid line. Some mornings I read about Gary Oldman's Oscar win. Others I see his funeral trending. Am I hallucinating? Maybe this is stress, or a tiny persistent stroke, or a really bad dream shaped by too many weeks of routine. That's what Dr. Hallstrom suggested. Sleep deprivation can do weird things. But tonight, as I lie in bed, I hear wings scratching the window, and my phone alarm, 7:12 a.m., goes off again, over and over, until my head aches and my vision swims. I set it for a different time before sleep, but by sunrise, it's always back to the same wrong morning. Maybe tomorrow, I'll wake up on the right day. Maybe I'll get back the ordinary routine I thought I hated. Or maybe I'll just be here, reliving a life that doesn't quite fit, a life that isn't mine, forever caught in the wrong morning. Story number 8. I started picking up night shifts at St. Catherine's Hospital last winter when my wife got laid off. The extra money was good, but the commute was murder. At 4 a.m., even Atlanta's highways feel deserted and eerie. Since neither of us wanted to risk our old sedan at that hour, I got into the habit of calling an Uber every shift. First couple of weeks, the rides were pretty uneventful. Sometimes the driver would make small talk, sometimes I'd just rest my eyes and listen to music. But about a month in, things got weird. It was a Tuesday. Rain was coming down, painting everything in slick reflections. My phone pinged with my driver's info. George, Hyundai Sonata, plate ended J48. The car pulled up, headlights wobbly in the puddles. I got in, feeling that chilly dampness you get before dawn. The interior smelled faintly of incense and something sharper underneath, like copper pennies. The driver, George, was an older guy with thick, gold-rimmed glasses. He met my eyes in the mirror and said, "Good morning, Mr. Turner. You're going to St. Catherine's, right?" I blinked. My profile just said M. Turner, but it's possible I'd mentioned the hospital to previous drivers, so I shrugged it off. We drove in silence for a minute. Then George started asking oddly personal questions. Did I have any siblings? Had I lost someone recently? What did I dream about? The way he asked, no smile, just that voice, low and weirdly hoarse, made the hair stand up on my neck. Halfway there, he missed the usual turn and instead merged onto a feeder road I'd never taken. "Hey, this isn't the route," I said. George didn't answer, just stared straight ahead, humming something tuneless. My phone, which I'd set to open the Uber app, suddenly went black and wouldn't turn back on. With each turn, the city outside the windows seemed emptier, more unfamiliar. Strip malls gone, exit signs missing, just puddles reflecting endless rows of orange lights. We stopped at an intersection under a blown-out traffic light. That's when George turned, met my eyes in the rear view, and said, "You don't belong here." That voice wasn't his. Felt deeper, layered, like voices stacked over voices. I felt frozen. The car door locks clicked open. Jolted, I forced myself out. Just stood blinking in the cold rain as the car drove off. I called my wife and asked her to book me another Uber, cutting the details for later. Thought maybe I'd just nodded off, had a nightmare, something. When I checked my Uber history later, it showed an entirely different driver's name and car. My ride with George didn't exist. 3 nights later, I took extra care, double-checked my ride info. The car was different this time, but as soon as I got in, I caught that same strange scent, copper and incense. This driver didn't talk at all, but his radio was tuned to static instead of a station. Again, the downtown looked wrong. Too empty. Streetlight shadow stretched too long. Everything too still. In the window's reflection, I could see the driver's glasses. Gold-rimmed, matching George's exactly. I tried the Uber emergency button on my phone. It froze. At the hospital, the driver finally looked at me and said, "You keep leaving the door open." Confusion etched my face because I had no idea what he was talking about. I asked sternly, "What door?" He only smiled, showing teeth as stained dark, and then drove off into the pre-dawn. That ride popped up on the app. Different driver's name, different photo, completely normal review options. I took a screenshot this time. 20 minutes later, the screenshot had disappeared from my phone's gallery. I started taking notes. Told my wife. She said I was just overloaded from work, maybe mixing up details in my head. Could be, I suppose. But things kept getting off. Diffuse shadows slipped past the windows. Bodies or maybe just tricks of tired eyes and passing cars. One night, I tried to walk instead. Halfway there, I realized the streetlights up ahead looked impossibly far apart, like the blocks stretched on, no turns or side streets, just the empty sidewalk echoing under my feet. When I stopped to look back, the city was just gone behind me, nothing but blackness swallowing up the way I'd come. I ran back toward home, heart pounding, and suddenly I was standing right in front of my building, no memory of covering the distance. The next morning, my feet were clean. No trace of rain or mud. On what I hoped would be my last shift before vacation, I called a taxi instead of an Uber. Different company, different car. But when I got in, the smell was there again. The driver's face was hidden by shadow, but he wore gold-rimmed glasses. My hands started shaking. We drove in silence until I spotted the hospital, but the sign out front was wrong. It read St. Catherine's Hospice. In faded peeling letters, and the parking lot was empty except for a single burned out bus. The driver said, "You don't belong here." Only this time, it was in my father's voice. I bolted out, door slamming behind me, and the car peeled off, tires shrieking on the wet pavement. I put in for a transfer, stopped taking night shifts, sold our old sedan, and convinced my wife to drive me when I have to go early. But last week, I was walking home from the grocery store, broad daylight, and I passed a Hyundai Sonata idling at a stop sign. The window rolled down. An old man in gold-rimmed glasses looked at me, smiled, and said, "See you soon, Mr. Turner." Then he drove off, and for a long time I stood there, not sure if I'd ever really gotten home. Maybe it's stress, sleep deprivation, a bad coincidence with drivers, or just how the brain works when you're overtired. Maybe it's nothing, but most mornings, just before I fall asleep, I hear an engine outside in the wet dark, waiting, headlights searching my street. And I know one day I'll answer that ride again. And I wonder. Story number 7. I work in accounting. I like to keep my feet on the ground. My friends tease me about my spreadsheet obsession, and my wife says I'd find a logical explanation for the devil himself if I ever tripped over him in the shed. So I'm not the kind of guy to scare easily, or to even notice much in the world outside numbers, until it became impossible to ignore. It started about 6 weeks ago, I think. It was a Wednesday morning, just past 9, and I stepped out of my office building in the city for a smoke. I felt the usual stress sharpen my chest, critical emails piling up, car repairs I couldn't afford, the whole bit. The plaza across the street was its normal, early rush chaos. People flooding the crosswalk and bus stop, food delivery guys with insulated bags, a lady with a stroller. All the city smells of exhaust and bakery and hot pavement. That's when everything just stopped. I mean it literally. Across the street, the entire crowd at the crosswalk froze mid-stride, like statues. Some guy with his knee bent, a woman digging through her purse for her phone, a pigeon in mid-hop, absolutely motionless. Even the traffic seemed frozen, the little taxi at the red light not revving, the driver's eyes wide and fixed. At first, I thought it was some kind of flash mob, a prank maybe, or even a medical emergency across the plaza. But it lasted maybe 5 seconds, five long, dead seconds. The air felt drained, cold, even though it was nearly summer. I could hear a distant siren, but nothing else. Then, as if someone hit play again, everything returned to normal. The woman found her phone, the guy finished his step, the taxi lurched forward. Nobody said a word. Nobody acted like anything had happened. Across the street, a kid spilled his juice in the same instant the world restarted, and I almost laughed in relief, but my hands were shaking. I finished my cigarette, convinced it must have been a panic attack or something. Maybe I blacked out, maybe I missed a beat. Like that time years ago when I fainted at the gym and the world dissolved for a moment. That should have been it, but it wasn't. The next incident was 2 days later. Payday, I remember, because I'd stopped by the ATM on my lunch hour. When I turned back to the crowd, there it was again. The entire block just froze. Even leaves in the wind and a frisbee thrown in the park hung in the air. This time I tried to move forward, heart hammering. When I looked back, my mouth was open and blinking behind the glass while I stared at it, completely out of sync for a split second. A shiver ran right down my spine. Again, the world started up like nothing had happened. I looked around, waiting for someone to comment, but everyone just went about their business. I told my coworker when I got back inside. He shrugged, said I probably needed more coffee or less screen time. The third time, and this was the worst, it happened in the underground train station on a crowded Friday evening. There were hundreds of people streaming up the stairs from the platform, all packed together, shoulders brushing. The low hum of footsteps and voices bounced off the tiled walls. I was halfway up when every sound stopped. Footsteps paused, and the tapping of a woman's heels hung in a stilled echo. But this time, there was one person moving. At the top of the stairs, a man in a bright yellow jacket, one I'd never seen before, blank expression, stared straight at me and started walking down, weaving through all the unmoving people like they weren't even there. His eyes never left mine. There was something in the way he kept stepping, deliberately, measured, while the rest of the world stayed frozen, that made my teeth hurt. He reached the step below me, leaned in close, and in a voice too flat to be real, said, "You shouldn't be awake." A bead of sweat snaked down his cheek. Then he straightened, turned around, and walked right through an old woman standing in his way. There was no collision, no awareness. He just blurred through her outline for a second. I swear I saw her hand twitch, like she wanted to grab him, but was stuck in place. A heartbeat later, everything snapped back. Noise rushed in, the train horn, phones ringing, 100 people jostling past. The man in yellow was gone. I nearly staggered on the stairs and some guy behind me yelled, "Watch it, idiot," but I couldn't answer. That night, I barely slept. My wife said I'd had a panic attack. "Work stress," she said kindly. She joked I should take some time off, go somewhere sunny. Maybe I should, I thought. But I couldn't shake the feeling that the city had eyes I'd never noticed before. Over the next weeks, the freezes happened again. Random, unannounced, each one lasting longer. Once, while driving, the entire street went soundless. Taillights and turn signals caught in a red haze that never blinked. I sat gripping the wheel, watching a drop of water beat on my windshield and refusing to fall. It was quiet enough to hear my heart pounding. The day after that, I awoke to find my phone's camera roll full of pictures I didn't remember taking. Blurry shots of crowds, bus stops, elevators. In every image, there was a yellow blur, sometimes in a coat, sometimes just a haze, always watching. My wife thought I was sleepwalking, or that my phone was glitched out. I told myself the same. I used to love the city's noise, but now I wait for that silence. Every time I step outside, I scan the crowds for the man in yellow, for a pause in the world's rhythm, for eyes that seem to know I can see the stitches coming undone. I haven't told anyone else. I still don't know what's real, what's stress, what's the tricks of a tired mind. But I just know I don't want to see what happens if the world ever freezes for good, and I'm the only one left awake. Story number 8. This all started innocently enough. At least I tell myself that now. One could write it off as overwork, not enough sleep, or just plain old stress. But sitting here, remembering every damn detail, I'm not so sure anymore. My wife and I live in this old two-story house in the suburbs. It's small but cozy, creaky floorboards and all. We both work full-time jobs, so our mornings are pretty predictable. She wakes up early, showers, gets dressed, heads downstairs to make coffee and breakfast. I usually linger in bed a bit longer. Our routine never really changes. The first weird thing happened on a Monday. I was half awake, drifting in and out. I heard Kate, my wife, humming from the kitchen. It was her good mood song, some 80s hit she plays on her phone. I could smell coffee brewing. Nothing strange about that. I got up, threw on a t-shirt, and headed down. The house felt colder than usual, and the stair carpet pressed damp under my bare feet, like someone had come in from outside with wet shoes. What struck me first was how quiet everything had become. The humming stopped abruptly, but the song from her phone was still playing, faintly, like the speaker was muffled. I could see her from the hallway standing by the sink, wearing the blue pajama set she'd worn the night before. For some reason, I was sure she'd changed. It was just a feeling, like a memory I couldn't quite place. "Morning," I said, voice catching in my throat. She didn't respond, didn't turn, didn't even flinch. Just stood there, head slightly angled down, hand resting on the edge of the counter. The worst part, her left hand was turned palm up, fingers twitching like she was tapping a rhythm, but it was out of sync with the faint song. The kitchen light flickered, and I saw her hair, wet, plastered flat against her head, dripping onto the linoleum. Except I knew Kate had dried her hair upstairs. I took a shaky step forward. The humming came again, deep and off-key, but not from her mouth. It echoed low in the room, almost mechanical. This time I got genuinely scared. I cut across the hall to get a better look, but the second I moved, the figure was gone. One blink, and she simply wasn't there. The song had stopped mid-word. The counters were dry. When I checked the sink, the air was icy, like the fridge door had been left open for hours. I went back upstairs, and there was Kate, towel drying her hair, clearly startled when I burst in. She claimed she'd never gone downstairs. I spent the rest of the day chalking it up to half sleep, maybe a weird dream while waking up. But that wasn't the last time. On Thursday, it happened again. This time I was wide awake, home early from work, lounging on the sofa. The sun had just started setting. I heard footsteps overhead, slow, heavy, almost dragging. With every step, tiny puffs of dust drifted down from the ceiling lamp. I called up, "Everything okay?" No answer. The footsteps stopped at the top of the stairs. Then I heard her voice quietly singing, but the words were wrong. She kept repeating the first line, "Don't go downstairs," over and over, until it almost sounded like a threat. I felt rooted to the spot. My hands started to sweat, a chill running up the inside of my arms. Suddenly, the back door slammed. I thought maybe Kate had gone out for a smoke, and somehow her earlier voice was echoing through the pipes or vents. I shook myself out of it and headed up to check. Kate was in the bedroom, headphones in, scrolling through her phone. She looked up, surprised to see me, and claimed she never left the room. When I asked if she'd heard weird singing, she gave me a look like I was losing it. That night I lay in bed listening for any sound. Around 3 a.m., I woke to a soft scratching outside our door. I tried to tell myself it was just the house settling, a mouse or a draft. Then I heard the humming again, impossibly soft but coming from everywhere at once. Saturday, things escalated. I woke up to shouting from the kitchen, my own voice yelling, "Why, Kate? Stop!" Panicked, I ran downstairs. The kitchen was empty, bright with mottled sunlight. The only thing out of place was a thin puddle of water by the sink, shaped almost like bare footprints, too small to be mine, too large to belong to Kate. I started seeing her more frequently, always just in the corner of my eye, never long enough to be sure. Once, coming home late, I saw a figure standing completely still on the bottom step of the stairs, hair covering her eyes, arms limp at her sides. I turned on the lights and she was gone, but I swear I could still smell wet earth, like someone had been out in the rain and tracked mud inside. Sometimes when I walked into a dark room, I'd hear faint breathing, matched rhythm for rhythm to my own, as if someone was standing face to face with me in the dark. Kate never saw any of it. I started doing things, trying to catch something. Once I snapped a shot and saw a blurry shape reflected in the toaster, a ghost of a face peering over my shoulder. I'm not saying it's ghosts. Maybe I was stressed. Maybe my mind was playing tricks. Or maybe there's a logical explanation, heating pipes, old floorboards, suggestible memory. But some mornings, when I walk down those creaky stairs, I'm still half convinced I'll find her standing in the kitchen, wearing the wrong pajamas, humming the wrong song, eyes not quite looking at me. I keep the downstairs lights on at night now and try not to look too hard in the shadows, just in case something else is still waiting there, learning how to wear my wife's face. Story number 9. Back in college, everyone had tricks for getting around campus. Mine was the shortcut. It was just a dirt path through 10 minutes of scruffy woods behind the science building. Two big maples marked the entrance, then a gentle curve toward Main Street. Nothing mysterious about it. I first followed it after my sophomore roommate, Greg, showed me the way. For 2.5 years, I took it nearly every day. In my last semester, things went wrong with that shortcut. I still can't figure out what I really believe about it. It started on a rainy night in October. Greg and I finished a late study group at the library. The wind made our umbrellas useless, so we just ducked our heads and ran, water seeping into our shoes. I led us across the parking lot and down the muddy track. The tree trunks glistened, leaves sticking to everything. The path should have curved, but after a couple of minutes, Greg grabbed my arm. "Dude, did we miss the turn?" he asked. I stopped. I didn't recognize anything. No old metal fence on the left, no streetlight glow at the end, just silent trees squatting under the rain, thicker than I'd ever seen them. Even the usual sounds, night bugs, far-off traffic, were swallowed by that darkness. We must have gotten turned around, I thought. Easy to do at night. I checked my phone, but the signal was gone, and the clock had frozen at 11:38 p.m. Greg's was the same. Only the rain made any noise. We tried another path that branched left, hoping it led back. But after a few steps, the ground squelched under our feet and the mud sucked at my shoes. My flashlight bounced off trees that looked almost familiar, but strangely twisted. I had a raw feeling, like eyes pressing against my back. Eventually, after way too long, we emerged beside the athletic fields, 2 blocks further west than we should have been, cut up by brambles, way off course. Greg made fun of my sense of direction, and I laughed, but my hands shook as I jammed them into my wet pockets. If it were just once, I'd blame the rain or bad luck. But the next time I tried the shortcut, bright sunny morning, no reason to worry, I found the same weirdness. I set off alone, checking my phone at the start. 5 minutes in, I hadn't seen the usual boulder where the path split. Instead, the trees pressed in tight, and I realized my footsteps sounded wrong, almost like they echoed. There was a sweet, slightly burned smell in the air I couldn't place. And somewhere off to the right, I heard the click of branches like someone or something following, always a few paces behind. I glanced back. No one there, of course. The path forked again, which wasn't right, but I picked the wider branch and kept walking. Every time I expected to see the campus street, all I saw were more trees and roots. The sky overhead flickered once, just a dim stutter, like a skipped frame in a movie. It made my stomach twist. When I finally hit pavement, I was near the staff parking lot, somehow behind the campus stadium. I joked to myself about invisible maze designers or those lost time stories you hear from people in the mountains. Still, I stopped using the shortcut much after that. But then, a few days later, Greg texted, "You gotta try it at night. It's totally different." I wasn't sure I wanted to, but he was my friend, so I gave in. This time we both tried to keep track, flashing our phones as we walked. They weirdly drained from 65% to nothing on the way. The woods felt too wide somehow. Our voices bounced weirdly, as if there was no canopy at all. We heard someone humming behind us, faint, tuneless. I'll never forget how it faded if you look back, but crept closer the faster we walked. Halfway, Greg stopped dead. "Do you feel static?" he asked, rubbing his arms. It was like walking through thick air. My skin prickled and my teeth felt gritty. Then the woods lit up for a split second, like silent lightning. Every branch, every drop of dew stood out in sharp contrast, and I think, for a heartbeat, I saw a figure standing between the trees, just off the trail, smiling ear to ear. Then darkness again. We broke into a run and finally saw the path spitting us out, except we came back right where we'd entered, as if we'd never walked anywhere at all. We never really talked about that night. I barely slept for a week. The next afternoon, I tried to find the familiar fork at the big boulder. It was just gone. In its place was a tangle of roots in a path.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
A patch of mushrooms I'd never seen. Too bright for October. No matter how hard I looked, no natural path led onward. It was like the woods had rearranged for their own amusement. I stopped using that path after that, flat out refused. I rode my bike the long way, even when late for class, even in the rain. Greg moved dorms and we drifted apart. He always changed the subject if I brought it up again. Once, long after, I asked a campus groundskeeper about the shortcut. He gave me a weird half smile. "That old trail? Kids say it's haunted, but it's just overgrown and muddy. Gets folks lost if they aren't paying attention." Maybe that's all it was. Wrong turns, bad cell service, college stress. Maybe my mind played tricks on me. Or I let Greg's nervousness rub off. Sometimes I wonder if I fell asleep mid-walk, dreamed it, and then woke up somewhere different. But late at night, if I walk past those two big maples, I can swear I still hear faint humming in the woods. The shortcut's gone now, swallowed by new construction. But I almost never look back when I pass it, just in case something's looking out from the shadows, waiting for someone to lose their way again.